This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We've been peppering folks with NFL questions all week long. I've got one to start, and then depending on how it goes, I might have more questions for you.
Are you going
to
pepper Bochy with NFL questions in the next segment?
Probably not.
All right, we got Bochy coming up at 12:20.
All right. Besides Patrick Mahomes,
ask him if he likes hugs. Because Wyatt Langford gave him a hug after the Grand Slam.
Okay. And
I think if you were a manager, would you have pile-drived him into the ground for trying to hug you?
I might have. Besides Patrick Mahomes, which NFL quarterback would you most want to start your franchise with?
Steve DeBerg.
No, no. And let's just say you're starting your franchise from scratch.
With Steve DeBerg?
Not with Steve DeBerg. How like old is Steve DeBerg?
67.
But could he coach like my offense, my quarterback? Could he be my quarterback's coach? Yeah. I bet Colby right now would say Steve DeBerg. I guarantee you. He would text me and say Steve.
We'll answer this seriously.
Thank you, Mike.
I will lean to Josh Allen and tell him, if you run into people as big or bigger than you, I am going to kill you myself.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Stop it.
Kill?
Yeah.
That's a threat.
Well, he's trying to ruin my career by putting his body in harm's way too many times.
I did not expect that.
I do like him a lot. I think that he has a lot of great traits. The one thing that I worry about is he's going to really hurt his career by having a major injury.
Colby did text me, Steve DeBerg, by the way.
Well, yeah, why didn't you ever book him for us, Colby? Book him for us now.
He's 70, by the way. I just wanted to throw that.
Well, Colby does his workout and eat good food, it looks like.
Yeah, he is amazing.
He is
Mike, so you're saying that Josh Allen he's the prototype for you. He's the one that you would want the most.
He has the arm. He has the athleticism. He has the size. He has everything you want. The thing that worries me is he does not seem to take care of his body during the game. He puts it in harm's way, and it scares me that if I pick him, which I just did, that once I did in week 5 of the season, he's going to get a cramp in his calf and his foot's going to be looking, you know, like it's going the wrong way.
Yeah. And like Dak did that time.
It's just a cramp.
That being said, with Josh Allen, a lot of people get really bent out of shape about his turnovers.
Sure.
And if you look at fantasy, he's the leading quarterback points getter in fantasy football. If you look at just overall points and numbers, he gets the most touchdowns scored every year. Like in like the last 3 years, you can look at him and Lamar Jackson. You're like, he gets points. Does he put his team in bad situations because of the turnovers? That's a different kind of conversation there. But he scores a lot. And at some point, Mike's right. You got to think at his career. He's got to stop running so much, and he's got to realize that. Look, I can't keep doing. Yeah, I can't keep doing this to myself.
Duke22 on the Twitch said Joe Burrow.
I have my list of three.
Okay,
Burrow's third.
Okay,
Caleb Williams is two.
Oh,
and C.J. Stroud is number one.
Oh, C.J. Stroud.
Right now, when it comes to arm strength, when it comes to seeing the field, C.J. Stroud did it last year. I want to see him do it again, obviously. I want to see him replicate that and the Texans still lose in the playoffs so they don't get a Super Bowl.
Sure.
But I want to see the continued growth of him as a quarterback and the reliability of him as a quarterback as well. But he's got the prototype size. He's got the ability to run if he needs to. He's got a big arm, and he understands the game. So I feel like I have a ready-made piece to start with right there.
From the 817, if healthy, Burrow. From the 682, if I take Burrow, do I also get a defensive offensive line, a decent offensive line? That's going to be up to you. From the 972, hot take, but I legitimately think Caleb Williams is the guy, and he'll put up the best rookie numbers we've seen in a decade. He has the talent.
Since Dak, then?
I guess so.
Or was there another quarterback after? Was Stroud? Stroud had a really good rookie season.
It just depends on, like, are you talking about turnover ratio? Are you talking about yards, winning? Like, there's a couple of different ways to look at that. So this is what was fascinating to me. The Athletic asked 27 NFL coaches and executives who they would pick after Patrick Mahomes. CJ Stroud led the way, followed by Joe Burrow, followed by Josh Allen, and then tied for fourth, Lamar Jackson and Caleb Williams. And then Brock Purdy got a couple of votes. No other player got more than one vote. And so that's the breakdown. Stroud, Burrow, Allen, Lamar Jackson, Caleb Williams, and then Brock Purdy.
Wow, Brock Purdy.
So I look at it and I think of Joe Burrow and I get the vote. It just, he's never healthy. I'm worried that my guy, Josh Allen, is going to hurt himself by the way he plays. But Joe Burrow gets hurt so much. I totally get it. When he is healthy, he is probably the pick. The thing about CJ Stroud is obviously you're looking at more potential than I know. You have seen him play in 17. I guess you count the the playoff games too. But and he looks unbelievable. Obviously, Caleb Williams is a complete and total projection. You know who I'm surprised who didn't get votes? Who voted on this again?
Coaches and executives.
I'm surprised that Justin Herbert didn't get a vote or two because of his talent.
Justin Herbert got one vote. He was in that group along with Dak, Jaden Daniels, Aaron Rodgers, and Matthew Stafford, which those last two are kind of confusing to me. Just because you're starting your franchise, you would think a younger quarterback. But yeah, he only got one vote. I'm also surprised that he didn't get more votes. I'm not.
Obviously, we are not huge fans of his because he's never taken the talent and then won the games on the field with that talent.
Now, putting aside who's going to win what award or anything like that, who is the best offensive player in the league that is not a quarterback?
Best offensive player that's not a quarterback. Justin Jefferson.
He comes to mind for sure. I was thinking Tyreek Hill was another Tyreek player Hill. That came into, I think, Christian McCaffrey is a guy that's in this conversation.
Bijan Robinson.
Not yet, but could be. I think at the maybe halfway point of this year, he could be in that conversation.
So of those three players you started with, they got 24 of the 26 votes. Justin Jefferson got 9, Tyreek Hill 8, Christian McCaffrey 7. The other two went to Trent Williams, which I could see, and Jamar Chase. Who is the best defensive player in the league?
This Miles Garrett's going to get votes.
Yeah.
Micah Parsons is going to get votes. Do you think TJ Watt? Watt he gets still, hurt a lot, but he'll get votes because of his talent. Do you think at all Aiden Hutchinson gets votes, or is that too much potential yet and not the production?
He should get
votes. I'll answer that one. He did not.
He should, though. That dude's a beast, man. I think TJ is Joey... Or Nick Bosa? Is Nick Bosa in there?
Is there a cornerback that you think deserves to be on this list?
I don't think so. I think everything's going to... This is very much like quarterback pass rusher is the two... Or receiver pass rusher in that conversation.
Yeah, I could see that.
And defensive tackles aren't going to get the kind of love and stuff like that.
Donald would have got votes.
Chris Jones did get one vote, but the other people y'all were all mentioning, Garrett, Watt, Parsons, Bosa, they all got multiple votes. How would you stack those four? And yes, Max Crosby only got one vote. I know that upsets some people. I didn't take this.
I think Micah Parsons doesn't. Don't you feel like Micah has the most years left out of the guys we named?
Yeah, that is true. But the question is phrased, who's the league's best defensive player right now?
Right now. Okay. So, I thought like starting a franchise. No, that was the quarterback question.
Right now.
Right now, who's the best? I'll lean towards the defensive player of the year, Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I would say that too.
Myles Garrett got half of the votes for everybody. He got 13 votes from the coaches and executives in the NFL. Micah Parsons is second, Nick Bosa third, and TJ Watt is fourth. Does that feel...
Yep, that lines up exactly how we kind of laid it out there.
Okay, who is a team that you think is going to surprise the NFL this season in a good way?
Surprise team in a good way.
All right. No, I want to say Jacksonville. My heart wants to say Jacksonville.
But why won't you?
Everybody thinks Jacksonville's done, right? That they overpaid their quarterback.
Yeah.
They're not that good and will never be that good, right? So
that's fair.
Wouldn't it be surprising if they came back and won that division this year?
I would be surprised by that.
I think the Broncos will surprise people in a good way because I think Bo Nix is going to look pretty good with Sean Payton. Now, I think, was it 4.5 games that they were slated at win total the other day, Kevin?
Yeah, I think that has been on the rise since then.
Yeah, I think they're gonna demolish that. But I think that they're definitely one of those surprising teams for me.
The Broncos did get a couple of votes, but here's what the top of the chart looks
like. Is the Bears on there too?
They are 6.
Okay.
So it goes Arizona Cardinals got the most votes.
Because of Harrison?
Maybe because of Kyler.
Kyler's back, baby.
Atlanta Falcons, Seattle Seahawks, Los Angeles Chargers, and Indianapolis Colts. That's your top 5, and then the Bears are right after.
All right, let's discuss that real quick, because how can the Falcons be involved there if Pitts is always injured? Like, that's just it's constant injuries. Yeah,
you lose Rice
guy.
And Gonzalez with that one.
Yeah, man.
But if their division lends it to the Falcons winning and going 10-7,
yeah,
like even 11-6, I feel like you'd be like, holy moly.
Yeah, otherwise, they have 2 quarterbacks.
Baker Mayfield taking over that. The Chargers, that makes a lot of sense, because everybody has thought for a long time that Justin Herbert has the physical tools, just can't figure it out, but the head coach is a good head coach.
Do you feel like the Chargers have already moved back and forth multiple times? Like, Jim Harbaugh got there, and then all of a sudden people are like, hell yeah, watch out. Jim Harbaugh with Justin Herbert. Now it feels like people have backed off and been like, you know, the rest of that roster is not very good. It might take them a little while.
Yes, I agree with you. Who's the bigger roll of the dice, the Colts or the Chargers?
I think the Colts.
I think it's the Chargers.
Interesting. I like that.
I don't care for their roster outside of several positions. All right.
And somebody did say Commanders, unfortunately, and I think they can surprise people by just not being crappy. Like
Commanders,
a walkover team.
Commanders were tied for 7. All right. Here's the flip side. This is, again, from NFL executives and coaches. Which team will surprise the NFL in a bad way?
I think the Cowboys could be on this list.
I think the Eagles could be on this list, too, because they were really good and then they just fell apart. I'm still kind of curious if they got over whatever it was that started breaking them apart last year.
I know I picked Josh Allen earlier. You start going down their wide receiver room and I'm just like, oh my gosh, who the crap is he passing to?
Yeah.
Okay, here's my question. The Niners, at what point do the Niners start going, dude, we can't get over this hump?
That is
a Super Bowl
question.
And they start questioning themselves.
That is a
They have a
fair
lot
question.
Of talent. A lot of talent. But I could see them being like, Luke, we got burnt out.
49ers are 5th on the list. 4th,
interesting.
The Jets, followed by the Bills. The Miami Dolphins are 2nd. The number 1 team on the list.
Packers.
It's right here.
Most likely to surprise the NFL in a bad way, the Dallas Cowboys. One executive said, quote, losing the defensive coordinator is going to be a huge deal, and I think it's a big difference in scheme from what they did before. They're plenty talented. It's just a hard place to win. And that's the last part that I know fans are like, yeah, agree.
It's a hard place to win.
Hard place to win.
In the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because they're in the regular season.
Probably.
And against good teams. I mean, that's a valid point, is that against good teams, like the Shanahans and the McVays, and, you know, whenever those guys come up, they're a little bit better. I understand that completely.
It's just that kind of hurts when the coaches and executives across the league are like, no, it's the Cowboys.
And are they saying hard place to win because of the Jerry circus?
Yep.
Okay, we'll discuss more
of that. Actually, you know what? Let me just say, that is my interpretation.
Okay.
It does not say in the quote, because of the Jerry circus.
Yeah, and it is all Jerry, right? He invited that.
Yes.
He's invited the, hey, look at us, is always look at us.
I don't think Will McClay is like, hey, let's drag this out so we can get a little extra going.
Yeah.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk with Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy right here on 105.3 The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Going to talk with Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy in just a bit. We're also going to have Mike Likes It as part of the Expressway, but wanted to throw a couple of other things out at you. Obviously, we've talked about the just really awful death of Johnny Gaudreau and his brother Matthew in the car accident that right before their sister's wedding. Supposedly it was a drunk driver that was responsible for this. So a GoFundMe started for the Gaudreau family and the wife and the kiddos and stuff. Its initial goal was $30,000. Thus far, it has raised $589,000. Now, I realize that the family would obviously trade all of that money and much, sure, much more to have Johnny and Matthew back. So I'm not saying, hey, that's good. But I think it's nice when people are like, I wish I could fix this for you. I know I can't. I'll try my best to support your kiddos and your wife with some money.
Yeah, I can. Like, that's...
You can't imagine it, right?
I had a friend that recently happened to.
Oh, my gosh.
The husband and wife were driving. The kids were at home. And it was raining really hard. There was a wreck on the highway, and the husband passed away. The mother lived, and they recently moved because they couldn't. He worked. He took care of everything, and so they recently moved to be closer to some family. And like, it's a very tough situation. We did. I mean, at the community grouped together to try and help out any way we could.
I appreciate when people step up like that, even though it's obviously an awful, awful situation. Real quick, Alec, if you can give me that cut number 11, I want to throw one more thing out before we get to Mike Likes and then hopefully talk with Bruce Bochy.
Clark gets away with a little push. Callaway buries it. And a little reaction for the crowd.
Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever are going to the playoffs, perhaps even more impressively. Per the Elias Sports Bureau, the Indiana Fever got above 500 for the first time in 189 games, or about five seasons. So if you're just looking for the success outside of the box scores and everything for a team and a particular player, first time in 5 years they have gotten their record above 500, and they're going to make the playoffs.
Well, and I think this is kind of interesting because early in the season, remember she got leveled, and all the NBA players, even the other former WNBA players, were like, where are her teammates?
Yeah.
Why are her teammates not stepping up for her? If you're going to hit my person, I'm going to be out there in your face to be involved in that too. That's not going to let that slide. And now it looks like the team has seen the work she's put in, and they're like, look, we're on board. We can win. We can win with her. They're on board and they're all trying to play. They're playing as a team now. Like, I did see a stat earlier that there are 17% of the league's flagrant fouls have been called. Is it in favor of
against
Caitlin?
Her?
Yeah. When she
against somebody guarding her. Yeah.
And then 80% of those have all come from the Chicago Sky.
Women, so, jealousy. I saw where they pulled Cheryl Swoops off the Sunday game.
Really?
I guess she's a national analyst, and there was the Dallas Wings game, and they're like, you're not doing this game.
So I've heard conflicting things about that because I know her and Nancy Lieberman kind of got into it, and she's like, that's not why I wasn't there. You know why I wasn't there, and that might start a whole different other feud.
Okay.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105. Through the Fan. Now, how about some Mike Likes It?
Okay, so I want to go. Obviously, there was a discussion yesterday here on The Fan between Gavin Dawson and Jared Sandler, and it was based off of Jack Leiter's start the other day. And like I said yesterday, I really liked what I saw from Jack Leiter. I understand the box score does not match up with what I'm saying. I even said on the post-game show on Bally's, I know this is going to sound homerish, but I really liked what I saw from Jack Leiter. I'm watching it from the perspective of, let me see this 24-year-old and let me see his location. Let me see his stuff. Let me see his sequences. Let me see how he's handling certain situations. Runner on third, two outs, struck out Aaron Judge. That's a positive sign. Now, in a playoff game, I'm going to go, dude, we got to do better than that.
Yeah,
I get that. I get that perspective of just looking at a box score and not caring at all about the actual process of it. Results matter, especially in playoff situations or in trying to make the playoff situations. But right now, I'm looking at hopefully Jack Leiter getting about four more starts and, you know, getting to watch the process of him improving.
All right, let's get back around to that talk in just a little bit. But right now, if you're looking to spice up your game day grub, reach for the original Louisiana brand hot sauce, the official hot sauce of the Texas Rangers. The original Louisiana brand hot sauce flavor favors the bold and also brings to you Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. How's it going there?
Well, we're doing great, and we were all super pumped about the Wyatt walk-off yesterday. I'm curious, are you a hug guy, or if somebody hits a game-winning home run, are you like, you can go ahead and hug me, that's great?
Well, I'll say when somebody does something like that, yeah, I become a hug guy. You know, starters that throw great games, I'll mix in some, probably not as much as a lot of them, but man, that's a big home run. Great comeback. A lot of frustrating things happened earlier for a couple of innings there, but you know, they fought back and set up that situation. And I tell you, Wyatt's got a knack of coming through, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Was it made all the more impressive by the fact that, I know he's not going to say this, and you probably shouldn't say it either, but it really felt like there was a couple of questionable, there was a questionable strike call along the way. It feels even more impressive that he can power through those tough calls that he's experienced all year.
Right. I agree. He did have some tough calls, and we talked about that in the post game last night. The guy just is having a year where, you know, he's getting a lot of tough calls to go against him. And for a young kid, he's just handled it so well. There's been a little frustration at times because you're doing your job up there and you take a two-strike pitch that's off the plate and you get rung up on it. Yeah, that's not a lot of fun. He doesn't let it affect his next at-bat. But last night, I know there was frustration, not just with him. Jonas at bat, he was really frustrated. And that was a big at bat. He had a chance to not just tie the game, but give us a lead with a base hit. And first two calls, he was frustrated with.
So, Boach, we get to have fun talking, you know, baseball here and have hypotheticals. And we all agreed that with the game on the line, number one, we would want Corey Seager up on the Texas Rangers. But we came to the conclusion today, number two, we want Wyatt Lankford up. And we're like, that is just so surprising. We're answering it that way for a kid who was in college last year. He's a rookie, but he seems to handle the moment, whether you fail or succeed, he seems to handle those clutch moments where he doesn't seem overwhelmed by him. Do you feel like he's your second best clutch hitter?
Oh, I'd say he's right up there. I mean, you got to look at Marcus. I know he's going through a little rut right now. Those guys, you're always hoping they come up in a big situation. But when you look at, you know, this being his first year, he's right there with, I think, all of them. Because he's able to control the moment, the adrenaline that's probably going through you. Fans are, they're into it, they're yelling, and it's all about slowing down the game. And it's not that easy. Sometimes that just takes time. But he's such a get back to using this word, and I know it gets overused. He's such a great competitor and wants to win. Whether a game goes well for him or not, you can see after a game when we win, he's excited. And if you play for that reason, usually good things happen. You want to be up in a big moment, and with that mentality, I think you're seeing good swings come off.
Talk with Bruce Bochy right here on 105.3 The Fan. I realize as the season goes along, it's going to be tough to stay, 100% healthy. Might not be such a thing at this point in the season, but would Corey Seager say he's feeling healthy right now? Are there anything that you feel like might be kind of hindering him?
Yeah. Oh no. There's no doubt. There's something hindering him, and you'll hear soon. you know, we're going to talk about it today. Yeah, that's why he's getting some time off. And, you know, without talking to Corey and see why, yeah, that's as much as I can give you. But, yeah, it's no doubt, it is obvious he's not 100%.
I realize this could be a waste of time, but I got to give it a shot. It's my job. Will he end up on the injured list?
Oh, yeah, very, very good possibility, to be honest. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when you're in a situation, you don't want to risk, you know, having a bigger setback or, you know, another injury. Same with John Gray. I'll put him in that boat. Now, if we were right in the thick of things, you know, probably John might be able to push through it, but, you know, this thing was really bothering him. And the concern you have to have when you have an injury, and I'll get back to Gray, even though we're talking about Corey right now, is with that foot. You know, if he alters his delivery, ends up hurting his arm, I think we go back to the Dizzy Dean story. And so, you know, this is the best thing you can do for these players is look after them, take care of them.
Now, Boach, I was talking about to Mike earlier, and I said, did you see Jack Leiter in the dugout whenever that grand slam was hit to walk off? And Mike goes, yeah, and that's the first time he's ever watched a game, a professional game, from the dugout as a player, because he hasn't been, you know, around for that. He's got come up and gone back down immediately. I was just kind of curious, from your perspective, what can you gain by being a pitcher in that dugout in between games whenever you, like for a Jack Leiter, what can he gain by being around the club, being around those other pitchers, and just kind of talking the game?
Oh, I think it's really, really beneficial for these kids to be around these veterans, watch a game, to see a game like last night. You know, Jack, yeah, he was put in a tough spot, come up, he spot starts and returning. But, you know, it just allows you to get in the flow, not just the game, but, you know, being around your teammates, getting more comfortable, you know, watching the hitters. You know, if you don't have the first game of the series, you know, you get to watch, you know, how your guys are attacking them or any adjustments you need to make. Yeah, you just feel like you belong more, and that's you know, it's a lot easier coming in for a game, and it's kind of like a gunslinger. You come in for a game, you go back. So now this helped him out, I think.
Boach, I want to go back to Wyatt Langford. I know he's playing a little bit of center field. Do you think by the end of this season you will have a better idea if he is a center fielder or left fielder of the future?
Yeah, I think he could play center field right now. You know, we'll see what happens this offseason, as always. You never know. You know, Leo is one of the best center fielders in the game. You know, Carter, he's going to be healthy next year. So, if I looked at the crystal ball, you know, I would say more left field is the plan. But without question, this guy can play center field. I mean, he's a gifted athlete. He can run. He's got great game awareness. I think center field, I think he thinks it's easier, too. Yeah, you just have that freedom to move around. You don't have to worry about the walls, you know, on the line. And so I think he's comfortable out there, and he, you know, doesn't even think about, you know, the move when I put him in center field, even the first game. And he just played a few games there at Florida, but I could tell he's comfortable out there.
You know, it's interesting. I'm listening to some of these answers, you know, and you were talking about some of the issues that Corey Seager's facing, and then it pivoted to John Gray, and you were just talking about Evan Carter, who I know we're optimistic about next year, but is hurt right now. Do you ever look at this, like, slate of injuries? And I know it's your job to figure it out, but do you ever look at it and you're like, what are we supposed to do today? Or what are we supposed to do this week? Because it feels like injury after injury.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to do that. You know, the woe is me, I guess. But, you know, there's no point in it. A lot of teams have injuries, big injuries. Now, if I didn't say this a couple of times, the baseball gods are punishing us for having an incredible year last year.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you just, between the numbers being down with our guys, the injuries and everything, it's like, okay, you're getting us for all the good things that happened the year before. But that's in jest and fun. And you know what? You always try to look at the silver lining. It does force you to play other guys and all that. So, you know, just gives you a better idea of what you, you know, have as you go into the winter.
Boach, do y'all practice hurdling pitchers when running to first base, or is that just something Josh Smith just did instinctually?
Yeah. You know, I saw that on replay. Because he kind of slowed down. I don't know if he was assuming that he was going to, you know, catch a ball and tag first, or he's like a pole vaulter. He was getting his timing down to, you know, the ball over him. And it was kind of a different play. I thought the pitcher even had a shot to throw his glove up and tag him, but he didn't.
So, Boach, being a former catcher, I watch Carson Kelly behind the dish, and he kind of has this, I don't know, energy, spark, grit. I don't know the exact word I'm trying to use, but I feel like he's really emotionally there with the pitcher and working his tail off to make sure that pitcher knows, hey, I like that pitch, or, you know, kind of with the body language. How important is that from your perspective, being a former catcher, that catcher kind of looks like he kind of has that energy and desire behind the plate?
Yeah, I mean, Carson's been around. He's, I think he's done a great job here. And he's gotten better. You know, going back to when he was a backup for the Cardinals and Arizona got him, he was trying to find his way there. But I think with experience and everything, he's made himself into a really good catcher, thrower, which he was. But I think the experience has really helped that, drawn that out of him. And but, I mean, he's a man. I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to him, but, he's all in on calling the game and everything, and that's important for the pitcher, without question. That's what you want to see, and he's done a good job with that, I think.
I know we have the PitchCom now, and Greg Maddux, they just did a documentary on him. Fantastic. And I think everybody knew this, not at the time, but if he caught the ball away from his body, he was telling the catcher, I want a fastball away. If he caught the ball and caught it into his body, he was saying, I want fastball in. If he kind of scratched his cheek with his glove, he wanted a cutter. You know, was there anybody that you caught that when you threw the ball back to the pitcher catching it, the way he caught the ball or something he did let you know what the next pitch was supposed to be?
Back when I came up, we had a lot of pitchers that, you know, through adding and subtracting, you know, that's kind of along the line what you're talking about. Yeah, they would do that. Not so much where they caught the ball, but if I put down a sign, we had to sequence of signs, and instead of going back through them, you know, if they went up above the belt, they would add, or below the belt, it would subtract the number from where you're from. Or, you know, if they went across, then it'd be just the opposite. You had to keep up with it. And that was pretty popular, with that Houston staff back when I came up in the late 70s, early 80s.
Talking with Bruce Bochy right here on 105 Through the Fan. I know you'd said, I believe it was 2 days ago, that the plan for DeGrom was to pitch again on Saturday. And if that goes well, hopefully he'll be ready to join the big club. Is that still on track? Is that still the hope?
Yeah, still on track. Now, we're not going to deviate from our plan. We're going to give him his fourth outing. I think that's the right thing to do, right thing for him, for us. All set there. Scherzer will throw the same day. He'll go to Las Vegas and get his work in. So we'll have those two knock on the door after this next outing on Saturday.
And then the last question I have for you, we have Chris Young on our station every week as well, and he talked about self-reflecting this season, about what could have been done differently, what he could have done differently to have a more successful season. Do you self-reflect at all during the season, or is that not really possible because you're like, well, we got another game tomorrow and the next day and the next day, and you're more focused on that?
Oh, no, of course we do. Yeah, that's how you get better. There'll be moments during the game, you know, yesterday, for example, I mean, that can't happen to, you know, to have a double steal, end up being a balk, but they had the base. You know, it has happened before with Hosey. I'm talking about Leclerc. But just little things during the game. We just talked about it, you know, well, the last 2 days, about things we want to do different, you know, to get better. Because really, if I'm honest, you know, if you look at all facets of the game that we do, quite hasn't been as sharp as we were last year. So, that's where it stops with me. And as a staff, this is what we're talking about. Next spring training, you know, what we can do different on the fundamentals, holding runners, bunting, things like that. All these hit and running more. I think everybody should self-reflect and see how you can get better. I said that you never arrive in this game with player, coach, or manager. I mean, you're always doing what you can to get better.
Excellent stuff, as always. We appreciate it very much. We'll catch up with you again next week.
All right, guys. Always good talking with you. See you.
There you go. Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy. And, you know, the Rangers know that big wins come from big plays. And that's why the original Louisiana brand hot sauce is the official hot sauce of the Rangers. The original Louisiana brand hot sauce flavor favors the bold. A couple of things there, Mike. I know we got Mike likes it, but the first thing, obviously, with Corey Seager.
Right, yeah.
And it's just a bummer. And just
led you to the water there.
Yeah. That I was thinking about it when he answered it. The fact that he had to pivot in the same question to talking about a different injured player. I know there's a lot that goes into a season, but that feels like an underlying part of this season.
Yeah, and I think he let us know probably at 4 o'clock when he's in the dugout talking to the media, or if Chris Young decides to talk to the media today, that we'll know more about Corey Seager, but it wasn't his intention or what he wanted to do at 12:30 today on the radio is to talk about Corey Seager's injury,
right,
and then what they're going to plan to do in September at shortstop, and then with Corey Seager. So, yeah.
Jeez, man, tough for him.
I'm telling
tough
you,
for us as Rangers fans.
This is my opinion. Mike likes it. My opinion. I don't think he should play shortstop the rest of his career.
Well, for health purposes.
I think he's going to be a Hall of Fame baseball player. I'm going to move him to first base. I'm going to get him off of that position.
I know it's a physically demanding position. Will you walk people through why?
Well, hamstring, groin, calf, all of those things. He's 6'4" and 230 pounds. I get it. Cal Ripken Jr. changed the game at that size playing shortstop. And since then, there's been plenty of guys. Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez come to mind quickly, as then these two big guys came along and were unbelievable at the position too. And Gunnar Henderson is not as heavy as Corey Seager, but he's close to the height of Corey Seager.
Wasn't Ripken like 200 pounds, you know, at 6'4"?
I would say he was probably 210 to 220.
Okay. That's still like Seager looks bulkier.
Yeah.
You know,
at this position. He's a slow moving guy. I mean, let's face it. He's slow. That's why he's not going from first to third on base hits. That's why he's not scoring a lot from second base on base hits. He's not getting any faster at 30 to 40 years old. And I just think that you're dealing with this injury. Remember last year, he missed a lot of time with, what were the injuries? They were, hockey term, lower body injuries.
Yeah.
And his body is not built to be a shortstop long term. He's done it from 2016 to 2024. I think from 2025 to 2030-ish, he should be a first baseman and a DH. That's my opinion, and my opinion doesn't matter at all.
Now, I know the two positions are different, and they have different nuances. Do you think he would be a fantastic defensive first baseman?
I think he has good hands, right? He has good hands when he's covering second base on a steal and picking the ball. He's using an 11.5 to 11.75-inch glove. You go over to first base, it's a 13-inch glove. It's different. It's not easier. It's different.
Yeah.
You get used to, after a while, of the big glove. He would have to work his butt off in the off season, and then in spring training, he'd have to put in extra work. He's a hard worker with the baseball bat. Does he want to be, I'm just throwing it out there, does he want to be that hard of a worker with a first baseman's glove? And then learning all the nuances of first base. He has a good idea. He's been an infielder his whole life. He has a good idea of the responsibilities at first, but I'm going to assume he's never played first base a day in his life.
Probably not, yeah.
And so he would have to work very hard to become a good first baseman, but I think he could. Mark Teixeira wasn't a first baseman. Chris Davis wasn't a first baseman. Jim Thome wasn't a first baseman.
Didn't McLemore play some first base for a minute?
He might have. He played all the positions besides catcher. I don't know how much first he played, but I just look at it, and I look at if, and we don't know this, if Corey Seager's missing the whole month of September because of another injury,
yeah,
and he has to miss 2 months a year, because last year he missed 2 months. This year, if he misses September, now you're saying once again he's missing approximately 2 months. And the first month was a very bad month because he was not healthy and ready to play the season. If that's the case, if that's who Corey Seager is, a 6'4", 230-pound, bigger guy who doesn't move very quickly, and I need him to hit 35 to 45 home runs. I need him to bat second almost every day. I need 120 RBIs. If he's batting second, I need about 100 runs scored. I get he's slow, so he's not going to stretch things into extra runs scored. But I need those things. I need a 280 hitter with a 350 plus on base percentage with a 900 OPS. I need that. If his body can't do it at shortstop, I have a position that, let's be honest, I think it's going to be wide open in the offseason at first base for the Rangers. I can do that, and now I know my bigger concern, or I have a concern at shortstop. But if I hang Corey Seager around shortstop for another year or two, I can't fix first base. If I know I'm moving Corey Seager to first base in 2026 or 27, I can't fix first long term, because now I know I got to move him at some point as long as he is willing to do it. And
that's
the thing,
a stopgap, yeah.
I was there when Alfonso Soriano wasn't willing to move off of second base. I was there twice when he wasn't willing to do it. Buck Showalter tried to do it. We had three guys playing second base, Michael Young and Alfonso Soriano, in spring training. It was weird. Michael Young talked about that story here with us on The Fan. And then Michael Young went to Buck Showalter and said, look, we don't have a shortstop. It was Manny Alexander at the time, who played most of the year in AAA with me. Is Michael Young moved to shortstop, and it all worked out. Then Alfonso Soriano went to the Washington Nationals, and he refused to move off of shortstop. And Frank Robinson said, I don't care. You're never playing a day at second base. I don't care what you say. If you don't want to make any more money the rest of your life, go home. But if you want to make money and you want to keep playing baseball, it will be in left field. And Alfonso Soriano hated left field to start off. That year, I think he became the fifth player or fourth player in baseball history to have a 40-40 year, and ended up loving left field, and it somewhat extended his career. He became pretty decent out there. I'll say decent defensively. I don't think he was awesome, but he loved throwing guys out there.
Arm, yeah.
And so I don't think Corey Seager wants to, but at some point, and it doesn't have to be this offseason, at some point, Chris Young or whoever the general manager is or whoever the manager is going to have to sit him down and say, I don't care what you want anymore. This is what's best for the team.
Would you consider Josh Smith at short, or would you look younger in their?
I would look at all my options. Okay. Right now, Josh Smith is my in-house option, but could I look outside of the organization? I could. Now, look, Sebastian Walcott, maybe that opens up for 2025. Maybe they're like, hey, maybe we do keep him at shortstop, because that's way more of an open position than we thought in 2027 is going to be my guesstimation is when he's possibly ready to help you out. And he'd be a whole 21 years old by then. So I just look at this news, and with Corey Seager, we don't know how long, we don't know if he's going to go on the injured list, but obviously Bruce Bochy just strongly suggested that he's probably going on the injured list, and it might be, I'm just throwing this out, it might be because they're not in a playoff race for the rest of the year.
I feel like he kind of insinuated that as well.
And if that's the case, if I'm Chris Young, which I am not, if I am Ray Davis, which I am not, if I am Bruce Bochy, which I am not, I have to strongly consider my guy that is the best offensive player on this team and I owe seven more years of contract to, if he's only going to play 100 games at shortstop because his body can't handle it, can I get 140 games out of him at another position? That's the question that needs to be asked quickly in this organization.
With the KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, what an eventful expressway right there. Coming up
now,
next.
The 2021 draft.
Sorry, Mike. Time for the C Block starring Corey Majors.
2021 draft.
Oh,
no. Is it really that bad being a Cowboys fan? Next in The Fan.
Yes.